The 100 Years' War, the Duguesclin Period, the Revolt of the Towns, 1380-1382, the Wat Tyler Revolt, Part 1. The English political community did not imagine that the Revolt of Flanders held any lessons for them, any more than the court of France had done. When popular rebellion erupted in their own island, the event took them by surprise, but it didn't come out of a clear sky. Most of the economic problems of the countryside ultimately sprang from the drastic depopulation which followed the Black Death. Falling rents, agricultural prices falling, accompanied by strong upward pressure on wages. The lords of the rural manors responded by systematically enforcing their surviving manorial rights and jealously invoking the Statute of Labor, which had been enacted in the aftermath of the first epidemic in order to limit the wage demands of the laborers and restrict their mobility. These measures were only partly effective, but they provoked sharp conflicts, sometimes breaking out into physical violence. The shadow of the Jacquerie of 1358 darkened men's thoughts, and fear of revolution became a recurring theme of political discourse. Conservative poet John Gower warned that the common people would one day break their bonds. France was undoubtedly the chief of the sundry lands that Gower had in mind, but he was not alone. After a rash of incidents in the south and west in 1377, the commons in Richard II's first parliament reported that peasants were forming sworn associations to oppose the demands of their lords and were openly resisting the bailiffs of the manors. They voiced their fear of rural revolution, as happened some time ago in France, even as they called for stronger measures of repression. There had been outbreaks of popular unrest in England before, but they had generally been localized riots directed against targets which were close at hand. The peasants' revolt was unique in its geographical spread and its adaptation of a broader political and ideological program. The immediate occasion for it was the poll tax, voted by the Northampton Parliament. The tax was profoundly hated. It was hated for its exceptionally high rate and the regressive basis of its assessment. It was hated for the intrusive way in which it was assessed and collected by officious outside commissioners instead of the local men who had traditionally been employed on this delicate and uncongenial task. But the revolt was more than a protest against taxation, or even against the reassertion of manorial control over the unfree and partly free men. The impact of the good parliament had extended well beyond the classes represented in parliament, and it inaugurated a tradition of popular radicalism surviving long after it was dissolved. The rebels were concentrated in the capital, and in the regions around where national politics had their most powerful resonance. They railed against the diversion of the king's taxes into the pockets of his ministers, and the treachery and corruption which they believed had undermined the war effort, just as the commons of 1376 had done. From these specific grievances, they moved to a generalized resentment of the whole class from which the king's servants and soldiers were drawn. When, after the young king's coronation, Bishop Brinton of Rochester preached against taxes taken from the poor and spent on supporting the pride of the rich, he filled his sermons with overt references to the disputes of the previous year, and his words achieved a fame extending well beyond Palace Yard, where it was probably delivered. The same themes achieved even wider distribution at the hands of popular preachers like John Ball or satirists like the widely read author of Piers Plowman. It became apparent as early as February of 1381 that the poll tax was being evaded on a large scale. When the collectors came to the Exchequer to present their accounts for the first installment, it was found that local communities had been declaring on the average about two-thirds, and in some places less than half of the number of taxpayers who had been counted at the time of the first poll, 1377. On March the 16th, the council appointed special commissioners in 15 counties to tour the towns and villages, armed with forcible powers of compulsion, taking sworn evidence from local officers and producing lists of undeclared taxpayers to be passed on to the collectors. Their operations were never likely to be popular, but the problem was aggravated by their high-handed behavior. As Chancellor Pole would later observe in a rare moment of reflection, if the lesser officials of the crown misbehaved, the king and his ministers found themselves forced to back them up, thus drawing the fury of the populace upon themselves. This is what happened at Brentwood in Essex on May the 30th, 1381. One of the commissioners for Essex had arrived in the town to review the tax rolls in the hundred of Barstable. The response of the surrounding villages was carefully planned. Their men appeared in mass, armed with old bows and sticks, determined to resist. The men of Fobbing, a large village in the north shore of the Thames estuary, were the first to be sighted. Their spokesman was one Thomas Baker, who appeared to have been one of the chief organizers of a revolt in Essex. He declared that Fobbing had paid under the existing assessment, that they had their receipt, and they would have nothing to do with the inquiry. The commissioners had come with just two royal sergeants and a handful of clerks for an escort. He ordered the sergeants to arrest Baker. At this time, the furious peasants fell on him and his staff, beat them up, and chased them out of town. Several of his jurors were captured and beheaded. Three of his clerks were lynched and their heads carried around the neighboring villages on poles. An overtly political direction was given to the rebellion 3 days later at a large meeting, which was held more than 20 miles away in the village of Bocking. Here, according to the hostile source, the rebels of Brentwood and the malcontents drawn from across the country swore to act together to destroy certain lieges of the king and his common laws and all lordships, and had no law in England except those which they had themselves ordained. The rebellion in Kent began 2 days later on June the 2nd, 1381. It was Whit Sunday, the time of crowds and summer games. The first incidents were deliberately coordinated with the actions of the men of Essex. The rioting began in the north of the county along the Thames as the men of Essex were gathering at Bocking. On June the 4th, the Kentish men, reinforced by about 100 Essex men, invaded Dartford. They forced their way into Rochester and laid siege to the ancient Norman keep, which was shortly surrendered to them by a terrified constable. During the next few days, men flocked to the rebel standards from across Kent. On about June the 7th, they held a great public meeting at Maidstone, at which they elected as their leader an obscure adventurer named Wat Tyler. Tyler, who was in fact a tiler, appears to have hailed from Essex. According to the reports reaching Froissart, he had fought in France and presumably was an archer. He was chosen because he had a ready tongue and a forceful personality, which shortly transformed the formless mob about him into a more or less organized army. Tyler's program, so far as it can be called that, was more ambitious than anything put forward by the rioters of Brentwood or even the conspirators of Bocking. He wanted to remove the traitors about the king and abolish serfdom altogether, with all the other incidents of the manorial system. So, the Wat Tyler Revolt has begun. Now, the sources for this, the Hundred Years' War, the Chronicles by Froissart, the Hundred Years' War by Perrois, the Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and the Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3, by Sumption. So, I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.